Hello, welcome to the Colcast. I am your host, Chris Collins. It is Sunday, the 3rd of March. Afternoon job this podcast, because I was up till, I think it finished at 6:30 last night, UFC 235. So very, very tired today, powered by adrenaline and lots of coffee. Been a busy weekend. I was up in Manchester yesterday again, helping one of my kickboxing teammates out. He's fighting soon at a national tournament, so went down to squad training for our kickboxing association yesterday. Realised how out of shape and overweight I am. I'm 95 kilos at the moment. So I was 95 kilos when I weighed myself a couple of weeks ago. Bearing in mind I fought as low as 80 kilos. I'm not doing too well at the moment, but it's difficult, isn't it? Everyone knows that when you've not got anything to train for, I'm having a bit of a break from fighting at the moment, you've not got anything to train for, there's nothing on the horizon, it's just a bit difficult to resist food, isn't it? The training's not a problem. I love going to the gym, love going to kickboxing, love going sparring, love doing all of that, but I mean, when you've got nothing to train for and you don't need to cut weight, are you really going to say no to that pizza when you get home? No. Pizza's always been my favourite as well. Pizza is just like my guilty pleasure. I've got a lot of willpower, but you can't say no to pizza. But it's got to be the right pizza. Like my girlfriend's a Hawaiian fan. I will never, ever get pineapple on pizza, ever. It's fruit on pizza, isn't it? It's weird. It's like, what's the difference between like that and putting like banana on your pizza or apple? Or bizarre to me. It's got to be like a meat feast or something. There's a really nice one, so cheap I am, but there's a really nice one that they do in Aldi near me at the moment. It's like 69p, and it's like this thin, crispy base pepperoni. Oh, it's amazing. Bit of the old sour cream dip, maybe a spot of garlic bread if you're feeling extra hungry. Can't beat it at all. Sorry, I went off on a tangent then. So yeah, I was in squad training in Manchester yesterday. That was fun and games. Sparring with the super talented guys and girls up there. That was a lot of fun. I've not been to squad training for a while, so it was good to have a bit of free time and get up and do that in Manchester. Got back last night, had a couple of hours nap, ready for the fights last night. Obviously got the car now as well. After the nightmare of the last couple of weeks with the car troubles and stuff, finally got my car. It's nothing special, just a tiny little Vauxhall Corsa, but practically brand new. Absolutely love it. Just nice to have a new car again. Like I said last week, you don't appreciate how important I think driving is, and so you have to get back onto public transport again, and my god, like, never again. If you don't know the story, go back and listen to episode 15. I mean, just, I've never seen anything like it in my life, and that's all I'll say. I've not seen any reports anyway of any Irish couples murdering each other, so I'm guessing that was the climax of their domestic and in carriage sea of the 9:35 from Chester to Crewe last week. So all's well that ends well. UFC 235 last night was a smashing card, to be honest. It really, really good card. Bit weird at points, some dubious reffing as well, which not mad, but just made things a bit difficult at times with certain fights, but we'll get into that soon. I didn't do too well with my picks on this card, and that's the thing that I love about MMA. You think you know everything, you think you can pick out results and you can pick out fighters and you know exactly how things are going to go, and then it'll surprise you. The fighters will surprise you, strange things will happen, the fighters will rise to the occasion. It's just that's why I love MMA. It's just an amazing sport. But starting with the early prelims, Hannah Seifer's got the decision, unanimous decision that I thought she would, beating Pollyanna Viana. So that's an important fight for her. She moves forward in the strawweight division. The two newcomers, promotional newcomers, so Macy Cheerson knocked Gina Mazzani the fuck out in the first round, as did Edmund Shabazian. He destroyed Charles Byrd 38 seconds into their fight. So top performances. You can't really get better debuts than that. I'm sure it's both the debuts. I don't think I've seen them in the UFC before. without going onto record and having a look, but excellent performances from those two guys. You move on to the prelims. Cody Stamann beating Alejandro Perez. I thought that would happen. Cody Stamann, obviously very unfortunate last time out, like I said last week, just running into Aljamain Sterling, who's on another level at the moment. He's just getting better and better. Obviously, Sterling's fresh off his win, his big win over Jimmy Rivera on his last go out. Johnny Walker continues to just light up the light heavyweight division. He knocked out Misha Sakuna with a flying knee, 36 seconds into the first round, I think it was, and then proceeded to try and do the worm afterwards to celebrate and dislocated his own shoulder. So, only Johnny Walker can hurt Johnny Walker. It was weird, a bit bizarre. I'm hoping it's not too serious because I'd love to see Johnny Walker back in action very soon. And Misha Sakunov is he's not a walkover Sakunov. He's beat some top guys. He's definitely a top 15 light heavyweight. So Johnny Walker's legit. He really is. The headliner for the prelims was Jeremy Stephens to beat Magomed Sharipov. Zabit continues his impressive run in the UFC. He's now 5-0 in the 145-pound division. I think the only other fighters to do that are the likes of Jose Aldo and Conor McGregor and the like. So he's joining that sort of champions elect company now. He's right at the top of that division. The only worrying thing I say about Zabit is, a bit like his fight with Botniak, he faded in the third round. And he's a big boy for the 145-pound division. I'm going to guess it's not anything to do with his training or how hard he trains or how he prepares. I'm going to guess it's to do with just the amount of weight that he's cutting. It could be a little bit of a concern. Obviously, Jeremy Stephens as well, he's a veteran. He's been there and done it with some of the best in the sport, 145 and 155. So, you know, it's tough. I don't know how he's going to address that going forward, but it was an entertaining fight. He deserved a decision. Of course he did. He did win the first two rounds. Obviously, Stevens came on strong at the end, but too little too late, and he just couldn't get it done. Couldn't land the big bombs that he wanted to land or he needed to land to win the fight. So, fair decision there. You move on to the main card then. So, Cody Garbrandt and Pedro Munhoz. I thought Cody Garbrandt would just be too good, too slick, too much better everywhere than Munhoz. And it'd just be a bit too much for Munhoz to overcome this. Cody Garbrandt is so frustrating. The same thing cost him twice against TJ Dillashaw. And he'll the first fight against TJ, he rocked TJ. And you just need to, at the top level, you just need to display a bit of patience. If you've hurt your opponent, you need to know when you're smelling blood and you need to go for it and go berserker. And when you maybe need to just rein it back a bit and land one or two more sweet shots to seal the deal. He rushed in on TJ and got clipped, and that cost him. He got clipped again in the second fight by TJ by just displaying the same mistakes that he made in the first fight. And this one against Pedro Munhoz, again, he just going berserker. He lets his emotions, like, he's so emotional, Cody. And there's nothing wrong with that, but he's so emotional, Cody Garbrandt, and he's just like fueled by fire all the time, and he just wants to go in there and destroy. And it's just cost him again. I mean, he's flinging punches left, right and centre. There's no guard. He's throwing a right hand and he's left by his waist. And it was just all too, against someone like Munhoz, who is a quality fighter, to be fair, I'm not taking anything away from him. He's tough. He's got a good chin on him. And Cody landed some nice shots, but he just needed to rein it back a little bit and then just look for the opportunity to land that second or third big shot to seal the deal and get the win. And he just went berserker, and it's cost him. He got clipped, and that's it. And it's three knockout losses on the bounce now. And I don't think it's worrying. I don't think that Cody Garbrandt doesn't have a chin or anything like that, because TJ hits hard and Pedro Munhoz hits hard. We've seen that before in their fights in the UFC, obviously. But I just don't know what it. I don't know what it is why Cody can't address this thing that he's got at the moment, where his just hands are just mega low and he's just wading in, throwing punches and trying to brawl. And he's still quite young, Cody, and there's enough time for him to turn this around. But it's back to the drawing board now. He's going to have to start right back at the bottom. You know, maybe get like an opponent from the top 11 to 15 range and at 135 and just build himself back up again. Munhoz on the other hand, Impressive performance, really, really impressive performance. He did what he needed to do. He saw the opportunity, he seized and capitalised on it. Brilliant knockout against a former champion. You know, fresh from losing the belt against TJ Dillashaw, one of the best in the world. And Munoz, who's right at the top of that division now. So, depending on what goes on with TJ, whether he fights Cejudo next or what's going on, you know, if Moraes isn't next for TJ, then surely Moraes and Munoz is the fight to make next. You've got Aljamain Sterling, who's just picked up that big win against Jimmy Rivera. That'd be a good fight. Lots of opportunities, lots of potential matchups for him. We'll see what goes on. But Munoz, super impressive. Cody, not ready to write off on him yet, but he's got some things that he needs to address when he goes back to Alpha Male. He definitely needs to tighten up some things. And he's a great fighter, Cody. He's got a lot of talent. Like I say, he's still young. He can do it, absolutely. So we'll see who he faces next time out. And I feel sorry for him, to be honest, because I think you're going to get a much better version of Cody Garbrandt. Sorry, just need a quick swig of coffee then to keep me going. So, women's strawweight fight on the card was Ticia Torres and Wiley Zhang. Wiley Zhang, obviously, she had a very impressive result against Jessica Aguilar. Everyone was kind of going with Zhang based on that. Torres is a powerhouse at strawweight. She really is. Everyone was saying that Zhang was very, very strong. I just thought Ticia Torres, you know, very, very strong, good striking. I genuinely thought Ticia Torres was going to impress us all there and get a stoppage. And it wasn't that Torres wasn't impressive. She performed admirably last night. Wiley Zhang is just excellent. She really did prove that she's one of the elite at 115 now. She is super strong, like freakishly strong. She's obviously very tall for the weight class. Striking-wise, you know, Ticia Torres on paper, she's the better striker. Obviously, she's got some background in kickboxing, but Zhang more than held her own and was dominating the grappling exchanges at times, and it was a very thoroughly deserved unanimous decision. What you do with Zhang next time, I don't know. I don't think this win is enough to get her a title shot, but she should be facing one of the top three or four in her next fight. So maybe look for like a Zhang Yanjaychek or maybe the loser of Rose Namajunas and Jessica Andrade, just something like that, like a fight that's going to get her over to the number one spot where she obviously wants to be, so she can challenge for the title. Welterweight, Robbie Lawler and Ben Askren. Oh, what a disappointing end this was. So the fight was amazing while it lasted. Obviously, Askren went in for a takedown. Robbie Lawler picked him up, slammed him, nearly knocked his fucking head right off his shoulders. Askren was in serious trouble. Herb Dean let it go. Rightly so, he let it go, because Askren was fine after that. Bit shaky at first, but got back in, started working on that takedown again. Did manage to get his ground momentarily. Got Robbie Lawler in a bulldog choke. And this is where it gets weird, because I'm not gonna question Dominic Cruz. And Dominic Cruz said last night on the broadcast, he was like, the choke was on the chin. So obviously it wasn't cutting off the blood flow. So it would have just been amazingly uncomfortable for him, obviously cranking on the chin. But it wouldn't have put him out. But it was the way that Robbie's arm went limp, and like his right arm just like dropped. Herb Dean picked it up. Some people are saying that he gave a thumbs up and stuff. I thought he was out. I think everyone who was watching live at the time thought he was out. So I can understand the call that Herb Dean made. I think he just thought what the rest of us thought. And he's got a job to do. He's got to keep fighters safe. And I can completely get it. And, you know, when Askren let go of the choke and then Robbie Lawler stood up like that, I was just like, oh, no. This is just... it's shit. It's just a shit ending to what was a great fight. It's the only way you can put it. And the only thing you can do is run it back. It was amazing while it lasted. It had drama, Robbie Lawler nearly finishing him, Ben Askren going back after him after that, getting him in the choke. I don't think Robbie would have got out of the choke. I really don't. As good as, you know, you've only got to look at how dominant Ben Askren is in those positions. I don't think Robbie was getting out of the choke at all. And Ben Askren was still, first round, he's still fresh. I mean, I know he was concussed, obviously, but he was still fresh. and he had a tight squeeze on, even if it wasn't a chin. You can say in hindsight now, Herb Dean, oh, you should have let it go, let him go out on his shield and stuff. Maybe, yeah, but I'm not going to be harsh on Herb Dean. I just think he made the call that he thought was right at the time. It wasn't like a horrific call, it was just complete and utter blunder. It's just really unfortunate the way it went. We all saw, I don't think anyone would disagree with me that when you watch him at live, you didn't think Robbie Lawler was out. I thought he was out. I saw his arm go and I was like, oh, he's gone. So when he stood up afterwards, it was just really unfortunate. But yeah, run it back. No one's going to say no to watching Askren and Robbie Lawler. Do it a second time. But why not? Just put it on the next pay-per-view. I doubt that any of them were hurt too badly. Obviously, Ben Askren was rocked, but a couple of months, book it again for like a May pay-per-view. Job done. Co-main. So, Tyron Woodley, Kamaru Usman. I obviously spoke about this last week. I thought that Tyron Woodley, too good. Whatever Usman's good at, Woodley's better at. How wrong I was. I think it was just a combination of on paper, Woodley just looked superior everywhere, but on the night, Usman just rose to that championship level that you need to, as a challenger, you need to rise to the occasion. You know, you're going in there and you're trying to rip the belt off someone, especially someone who's been as dominant as Woodley has at welterweight, widely regarded as maybe one of the top three welterweights of all time, and rightly so. You look at his resume, Woodley, and he's beaten some of the best, and he's had some amazing performances in the UFC and Strikeforce before that as well. Kamaru Usman just rose to the occasion last night. He looked outstanding. He really did. He just put the pressure on Woodley early, walked him down, and mixed his striking and his takedowns excellently. His top control was unbelievable. Woodley just couldn't get a peep, couldn't get out from underneath him, just making it uncomfortable for him all the time. Usman was constantly looking to finish, looking to advance position. You know, it wasn't just like he was stalling on the ground. I don't think it was a boring fight. I think the crowd were booing at one point, but I just thought it was an amazing display of dominance by Usman. That mixed with the fact that Woodley just didn't seem to get going at all. He was just looking for like a Hail Mary shot, or he jumped on the guillotine a few times, hoping that he could try and wrap that up. Usman's too good a grappler. You're not going to get that on him. You're not going to jump guard and get a guillotine on him like that. Not unless he leaves his neck hanging badly in that. And he's just not going to do that. And even then, I think if he did get caught, he's got the grappling chops and the strength to be able to get out of that at a bad position like that, like a guillotine. He's just really disappointing from Woodley. I'm sure he's disappointed with his performance as well. It had shades of what Rory McDonald did to him in his last loss. And Rory McDonald employed a very similar game plan, just backed him up constantly against defence, mixed his takedowns with his striking excellently, just kept Woodley guessing, so Woodley didn't know what to do, and then he was just hesitant to throw down, and Usman did exactly the same to us, exactly the same to him last night. God, I can't speak today, I apologise. Just kept Woodley guessing. Woodley didn't know where he was. But a fourth round, he was absolutely exhausted, and he just didn't have anything left to be able to muster up any sort of defence or try and go for the win. So props to Usman. You got your first African-born UFC champion. That's huge for the promotion. That's huge for that region in terms of MMA. I don't think the UFC, Bellator, ONE FC, you know, all the big promotions, I don't think they tap into that market enough. I think there's some excellent fighters over there and some great promotions in Africa, especially in South Africa. So hopefully Usman can help shine a light now on that region, that part of the world. And the excellent fighters that are coming out of there. Tremendous performance, great post-fight display, show class, give praise to Woodley. Just, he's hard not to like Usman. He's quite a likeable guy, isn't he? And he was just a very, very good performance, so congratulations to him. Main event, John Jones and Anthony Smith. So John Jones did what we all thought he was going to do. Didn't get a finish, but he cruised, didn't he? He didn't step out. I don't think he needed to step out of first gear. Tentative first round, sort of feeling that process between the two of them. And after that, Jones just started to take over. Smith just seemed to be waiting all the time, waiting on what Jones was going to do. And when you're facing someone as good as Jones is better than everyone. light heavyweight and probably at heavyweight as well. He's better than everyone. He's got all the physical advantages. He's got all the advantages on the ground. He's got all the advantages with grappling. He's got all the advantages with the striking. He's got all the advantages blending them all together. He's just a freak. And you have to take risks. You have to. You can't play it safe against Jones because you, at best, will do what Smith did last night and lose the decision. You'll survive. And Smith was just fighting for survival from the second round onwards. And it was a good performance. And Smith absolutely deserved to be there on the strength of what he's done since he's moved up to 205. He absolutely deserved to be there. And he made it as competitive as he possibly could last night. But he just seemed to... I don't know if it was the occasion, like how big it was, or whether he got in there, felt John Jones and was just like, God, you now I understand. Or I don't know what it was, but you've got, I mean, that fifth round goes. You know you're four rounds down. You have to throw the kitchen sink at it. You've got to go broke. This is your opportunity. It's your shot. You might never be back here again. You're against the greatest of all time. You have to take a risk and you have to go for it. And get knocked out. Get knocked out in the fifth round. Why not? But if you're going to lose, you know, die, like he said in his promotion for the fight, die trying. I'm going to be the champion. I'm going to die trying. And I just didn't see that from Smith last night. And he was critical of himself at the end. I think he was disappointed what he was saying, how he performed, rather, and what he'd seen from himself. And it's easy for me to say, I'm an armchair bleeding supporter, and it's easy for me to say, oh yeah, take risks and do this and do that. Listen, Smith's miles apart from me. He knocked me out in 10 seconds. But he's got to be disappointed with that performance last night. I think he knows that he could have given a lot more and probably should have just gone out on his shield rather than survive for five rounds, basically. I will say this for Smith, though. He had an opportunity later on. You know, Jones landed that. He booted him in the face, and Herb Dean just seems to let that one go. Weird decision from Herb. And then he landed a knee on the ground and Herb took 2 points. So I don't know what that was. I don't know if he knew he fucked up with a kick and decided to take another point. God knows. But Smith could have sat there and he could have won the title by DQ, and he didn't. And you got to bear in mind, it's not just winning the title. It's the financial implications of that. It's the fact that you know you're going to get a big pay-per-view rematch against John Jones down the line. The notoriety, the fact that you'd be classed as a champion forever. You know, it's all the stuff that comes with it, the media attention and everything. It would have made him bigger, and despite how it come around. And Smith, you know, true to himself, no, I'm fine, I want to continue, let's go, and carried on. You can't, I know it was the right thing to do, of course it was the right thing to do, but you can't tell me that anyone else wouldn't have been sat there thinking, I can win the title if I just sit here and just say that I'm too injured to go on. Or fighters have for a lot less they have, for like someone grazing the nuts or something like that, and they've like given up and stuff. But it was just really admirable by Anthony Smith. He just seems like a really, really nice guy, one of the good guys in MMA. I really hope he can work himself back up and get another shot or another crack at the title one day. He's one of them, Anthony Smith. He's been around for so long. Used to fighting in strip club car parks and stuff back in the day, and he's done it the hard way. And there's no dishonour in how he performed last night, but I just think he'll feel like, and I feel like, he could have given a lot more, and he maybe should have just gone for broke. John Jones, there's not really much you can say. Like I say, he didn't really seem like he needed to step out of first gear. Just looked dominant throughout, mixing up his striking amazingly. That lead leg of John's is amazing. He's so quick, the way he whips it up. He's trying to go for teeps to the chin, teeps to the body. His spinning back kick was good. His lead leg side kick was amazing. His leg kicks are nasty. You know, when he was getting Smith up against the cage, he was using those shoulder bumps effectively. He's just so creative, John, in there. He's like he makes things up on the spot and he just makes them work, and he can blend them into his style. And he's constantly improving and adapting and adding new little things to his arsenal. And, you know, now is the time. The present is the time to fight John Jones, because every day he just seems to get better and better and better, weirdly enough. And he's already probably the greatest we've ever seen. Don't need to go into all his drug past and stuff. You know, that is what it is. But another dominant performance. I'm guessing they're going to give Jones Santos next. He did speak about Adesanya after the fight, but I think Thiago Santos, based on his run at 205, deserves the next crack. John Jones seems to come out of it unscathed, so maybe we see that in a couple of months, May or June. Fingers crossed we get to see John Jones again soon. And that is pretty much it for UFC 235. Nothing else really to mention. Solid card. Bit disappointing times. Strange night for Herb Dean. But aside from that, really, really solid card. Really enjoyable night of fights. And we've got a new champion. And we've got same old dominant champion at 205. In terms of news this week in the fight world, obviously you had the big news, which was ONE FC signing Vitor Belfort. Vitor Belfort, obviously on the back nine of his career now, he's 41 years old, but all I will say is if we get TRT tour and they decide to turn a blind eye to drug testing, then this could be fun. And there's some fun matchups for Vitor over in ONE. Obviously, the big fight, I'm trying to think that there's a lot of big fights actually that they could do with Vitor over there. Obviously, you've got the heavyweight champion in ONE is Brandon Vera. If he decided to go up in weight like he has done before, Vitor, you know, that would be a fantastic fight. You can't say it wouldn't be. Brandon Vera as well, I think, would match up with him very, very well. It'd just be an amazing fight, especially how good Brandon Vera is looking over in ONE at the moment. Ever since he's gone over there to Asia at the UFC, he's looked outstanding, and he's kind of coming to his own, hasn't he? And he's looking extra thick at the moment. So he's a big boy, and it's up to Vitor. It depends what he wants to do, whether he just wants to fight for fun or he's still going for world championships. I think he's good enough to go up there and maybe challenge Brandon Vera. The big fight for him, if he wanted to stay at his current weight, would obviously be the double champ, Ong Lung Sang, light heavyweight and middleweight champion. Obviously, that would be an amazing matchup, I think. I think Ong Lung Sang would deservedly be the favourite, just based on his run at the moment, how good he's been looking, his strength of competition, the fact that he's younger, he's the fresher fighter. You know, there's so many things on Lung Sang's side, but that'd be an amazing fight for Vitor as well. He's up to Vitor. He's at this stage of his career where I think he can kind of pick the fights that he wants and people will be interested, won't they? So, yeah, hopefully we'll see Vitor Belfort fight soon and we get to see old school Vitor Belfort. Asterisk. I won't say anything more than that. Colby Covington this week was very entertaining, wasn't he? Colby Covington usually does my head in, but he was super, super entertaining this week. So, obviously, he was disrupting Kamaru Usman's open workout. He had his little interim title, and that megaphone just shouting things out while Usman was warming up. So that was absolutely hilarious. And then the really funny one was, oh, my coffee's gone cold. Ugh, nothing worse is there. The really funny one was when he put onto his Instagram Live him walking through the Vegas casinos and interrupting Dana while he was gambling. Oh, hey, Dana, I just want to know why I'm not getting an interim title shot not fighting this weekend. Fucking hilarious. Dana's like, I'm gambling, go away, get out my face. Some girl, Dana was obviously trying to chat up as well, just a newer place, didn't want to be on the camera and fucked off. Really, really funny. This is the sort of stuff that Colby should be doing, I think now. Sometimes it's dead cheesy, the stuff he does, I can't stand it, but this stuff was actually funny. I think it was an amazing move by him to go to Las Vegas, and towards the end of the Woodley and Usman fight, everyone was commenting on the fact that Dana went over to speak to Colby. It's obviously paid off. I think Colby is going to get the next fight against Usman. I can't see who else would be in line now. If he didn't run Askren and Lawler back, you could maybe do Askren and Usman. There's a bit of history there. If Colby wasn't next for the title, you could do Colby and Askren. That's a great fight. There's obviously a little bit of history there as well. So many options at welterweight at the moment, but Colby's done himself the world of good. For once, his cheesy promos and smart talk has actually paid off, and he seems to have put himself back in Dana's crosshairs for a title shot. So, fingers crossed, we get that fight. Overeem and Volkov have been announced for the UFC on ESPN 7 header in St. Petersburg in April. I think that's April the 20th. Good fight, excellent fight. I think the winner will probably be in line for a title shot, or at least one away. Overeem's always one or two fights away from a title shot. You know, that's a given. He's coming off a good win in his last fight. And Volkov obviously had that tough fight against Derek Lewis, where he was winning the whole fight and then he just got caught making a silly mistake in the last 10 seconds. You know, other than that, Volkov's on a really impressive winning streak. Probably the biggest win that he picked up with that was that impressive win. I think it was in London, actually, against Fabricio Verdum, the former champ. So Volkov, I think, here, if he gets an impressive win over him, I think he puts himself into title contention. So good fight, yeah, it makes sense all the way around. Anderson Silva and Jared Cannonier are fighting at UFC 237 in Brazil. Bit of a strange one from Anderson, because Anderson arguably should and could be getting a bigger fight, but it depends. It could be a couple of things. Maybe Anderson felt that he was competitive against Adesanya, so just wants to get back in the trenches and get a win under his belt and start working towards that title shot again. Or, you know, maybe it's just the fact that it's in very close to his hometown, Brazil. Maybe he just wants to fight in Brazil one last time, bow out maybe, if he gets a win. I don't know. Dangerous fight for him. You know, Cannonier's looked amazing in his last fight, you know, that big knockout of a branch. It should be a fun fight. I think Cannonier is going to give him the stand-up battle that he wants. I think Anderson, based off the strength of his showing against Adesanya, he's still good enough to beat a lot of the guys in the top 15 at middleweight. So, fun fight. Bit of a dangerous one for Anderson, but depending on what he wants to do, it makes sense on both fronts. If he wants to get himself back into contention, it's a good fight to have and to make. If he just wants to bow out on top in Brazil, like I say, at home, picking up a win or trying to pick up a win over Cannonier, it makes sense for that as well. So looking forward to seeing that UFC 237. Only other story really this week of any note, Pitbull Brothers have obviously signed an extension with Bellator. Makes complete sense. So two of the biggest stars over in Bellator, the Pitbull Brothers, super entertaining, loads and loads of victories, two of the best that have ever graced the cage in Bellator, and I would have been highly surprised if Bellator wouldn't have tried to sign them back up. So yeah, makes complete and utter sense. They'll be staying with Bellator for the foreseeable future. This weekend we have a UFC fight night, so Derek Lewis and Junior Dos Santos, and we've also got a ONE Championship event. I think that's on the Friday night, Reign of Valor. That is being headlined by the welterweight title fight between Kadastam and Kitchigan. So we'll break that one down first. We'll go for the top three fights that are on that card. So you've got a big, I'll say quite important heavyweight fight between Alon Ngalani and Mauro Ciarrilli. Ngalani is, obviously most of his success has been in kickboxing. He's quite a successful kickboxer. He's the end of his kickboxing career. His last few fights have been a bit tricky, but before that, you know, he had some decent performances. Obviously, what I'm trying to touch upon though, he's predominantly, very very predominantly, a stand up fighter. He's been a bit of a mixed bag in his MMA career. He's 4-4. You know, the fights that he's lost, he's not exactly lost them against bad competition. Alexandre Machado, you know, that was a bad loss, but Machado's a quality fighter. Aung Sang, you know, he's a double champion over in ONE FC, so that's understandable. There's no dishonour in that. The last fight he had, close fight, could have gone either way against Turacher, Alan Bold, but he picked up the decision. I watched the fight. I didn't see the fight the first time around, I will admit, but I watched the fight just in preparation for this podcast. I thought it was the right decision. I thought Ngalani did just about enough on the feet to pick up the decision there. And you look at his record, you know, just like I said, a stand-up fighter, he's a knockout artist. He's got power in every single limb. He can knock you out of anything. You know, he's going to be a tricky one for Mauro Ciarrilli. For the UK fans, obviously, you'll recognise Mauro Ciarrilli as the former standout in Cage Warriors, the former heavyweight champion. Had some great fights over in Cage Warriors. He left on a 5-fight win streak. Obviously, the big fight in that run was the 15-second KO over Cal Moore. Came over to ONE FC, got a title shot straight off the bat, and was far too aggressive too early with Brandon Vera, and got clocked by a counter. I think it was a counter left, and finished quickly. So couldn't have been a worse debut for him, to be honest. He'll be looking to bounce back here, and Mauro Ciarrilli's a knockout artist as well, and I think that's a, I think it's worrying that, to be honest, because If he approaches this one the same way that he approached the fight against Vera, he's going to get knocked out very, very quickly by Ngannou. He's not going to want to play that game with him. So I'm expecting a bit more of a conservative Marachirilli. I think he'll come out and look for opportunities this time around rather than trying to rush things, trying to force the opponent's hand. And I think he's going to pick up a second round TKO. I think he'll just, and Ngannou's a big boy, I think he'll, like I say, come out conservatively. He'll just keep him working, keep him guessing, and then in the second round, as Ngannou's starting to tire, he'll land something like a big right hand or something along those lines, get it down to the ground and then finish it there. So that's that one. So yes, I'm going to say TKO for Marachirilli round two. Co-main event on the card. So Foe Tor and Johan Mulia Legowu, the Iceman. Not to be confused with Chuck Liddell. So let's start with Johan Mulia Legowu. So Legowu is currently 87. Bit of a salty record, I must admit. He's been in there with some decent fighters. I'm not going to lie. Especially for that area of the world. He's picked up good wins in the past. Hardeep Singh was a decent win. That was a good tight triangle choke in the first round. His last win, though, was quite a while ago now, 2016 against Mario Sato at Widowan. That was another submission. He's predominantly a submission fighter, ground fighter. He finds a lot of his success on the ground, but he is susceptible to being submitted as well against opponents that are just that little bit more versed in submissions than he is, and he's on quite a rough run at the moment. So his last three fights, he lost to Sanuto Pennycat at one championship titles in Titans. That was a rear naked choke in the first round. His last fight against Victorio Senduk, he was knocked out very early in the second round. Before that, Jiawen Ma knocked out again early in the second round. It's kind of Vitor's fight to lose this, by the way. I'm sorry if I'm butchering that pronunciation. I am not the greatest with names. If you listen to the podcast, you will understand that. But a bit of a showcase fight this for Fajitor. He's 6-1, so obviously a much better record. He had a tough loss last time out against Keanu Subba. Decent name for Subba because he picked up the all submission in the first round, a guillotine choke. But before that, picked up five wins on the bounce. Very, very dominant performances, apart from one that the Sotobaro fight was very close. I think you could have been forgiven for the judges giving it the other way, but apart from that, you know, predominantly a stand-up striker, or a stand-up fighter rather, quite a nasty striker, plenty of power in his hands, good kicks, really, really good kicks. He actually knocked out Sorce in his last win with a head kick in the first round. I think this is set up for Tor to get a first round, turn it to Jonathan Ross then for a second, it's first round knockout this. I think he's just gonna piece Legowu up. I don't think it's gonna be close in any way, shape or form, and I think you're gonna see Legowu go 8-8, and he's gonna turn that record even saltier. I'm gonna say it's a first round knockout. I'm going to say it's a highlight reel, maybe like another head kick or just like a massive right hand or something. He just knocks him clean out, and that's how that one ends. Georgie Kikujin. So Kikujin is he's deserving of his shot. He's 20-5. He's been on a good run recently, I must admit. Bit of a step up here for him in Sebastian Kadastam, I'm not going to lie, but if you look at the strength of his competition, I mean, hang on, let me just get Kikujin's record up, because he is on a hell of a winning streak at the moment, and I couldn't tell you though how many he's won on the bounce. So his last loss was in 2014 against Salamu Abdurahmanov, and since then, sorry, my laptop is so slow. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I'll count more if the laptop actually wants to work. apologise. I hate dead air, so I'm just going to keep muttering sweet nothings in all of your ears until my laptop does decide that it wants to live. I'm looking at, you know, looking at his record as well. I'm watching him. He's such a mixed bag, Keegan. He can do it all. He's very, very good and slick on the ground. He's got power in his hands. He there's a lot of ways that he could win this fight. I apologise, my laptop is completely and utterly broken down. I'm trying to count these wins for you, but it's just not seeming to work at the moment. So he's on a big win. He's on a big win streak anyway. And you could argue, looking at his record, before his last fight, the strength of competition just wasn't there, despite the fact that he was finishing fights left, right and centre. But then he came up against the old UFC veteran. He was kind of banished to the underworld, wasn't he? Husamar Palhares. And he knocked out Palhares in the first round in December. And that was a big win. That's kind of the key marquee win on his record. And that's obviously earned him his shot against Sebastian Kadistan. I don't think it'll be enough, though. Kadistan is he's quality. He really, really is. You know, a couple of fights ago, he lost against Ben Askren. There is no shame in that. We all know how good Ben Askren is. But he bounced back very well against Agalantani. Big knockout there, TKO. Nasty elbows finishing that one. And then against Tyler Maguire, a fight that I thought he was going to lose. I thought Tyler Maguire was going to dominate the grappling exchanges in that and pick up a unanimous decision win. He starched Maguire in the fifth round. It just goes to show me, you know, his fitness reigns supreme in that. He was just really well conditioned in that title fight. And it showed, you know what I mean? The fact that he picked up the stoppage so late, he still had the power to put Maguire away. It was an excellent performance, a title-winning performance. And I think Kadistan's going to get it done again here. I don't think he's going to knock out Georgia. Georgia's quite tough, but I think he will win a unanimous decision. I'm going to say maybe Georgie picks up one or two rounds, just on the strength of, just on the strength of his abilities. Basically, the fact that he has so many skills in so many different areas. I'm going to say that he maybe nabs a round, maybe two, but I imagine it's going to be a 49-46 decision, unanimous decision for Kadistan. I just think he's on another level right now. He's looking the best he's ever looked. And I just don't think Georgie's going to be able to find the answer to be able to beat him. And that is your Friday. I'm sure it's Friday night. One Championship Reign of Valor. They are my picks for that. Obviously, some good fights underneath that on the card. But they're your main three fights for that one. UFC Fight Night this weekend is on Saturday night, March the 9th. And that is a fun one, obviously being headlined by Derek Lewis, the Black Beast, and Junior Dos Santos Cigano. Some good fights otherwise on the card. Alex White and Dan Moret is kicking it off. That's a fun one at lightweight. Alex Morono and Zach Katow, that's a good one. Louis Smolka's fighting on the card. He goes back to he's back at bantamweight now. He's against Matt Schnell. You've got Marion Renault. Used to be right at the top of that bantamweight division, women's bantamweight division. She's going up against Yana Kunitskaya. That's a fun fight. Rocco Martin against Sergio Moraes is the prelim card headliner. That's a fun one. But we go to the main card, and starting the main card is Tim Boetsch and Amari Akhmadov. So Tim Boetsch, a long, long time ago, was very, very close, perilously close to getting a title shot. Obviously welcomed Hector Lombard to the UFC. Excuse me. Welcomed Hector Lombard to the UFC in 2012 and beat him by split decision. It was a shit fight, but still won. And we thought, you know, one more win and he was going to get it done. He'd get his title shot, but he lost to Costa Philippou. And that kind of started this zigzagging win-loss situation that he finds himself in now. So after that, he lost to Munoz. Picked up a win against CV Dolloway, but then lost to Luke Rockhold. Picked up a win against Tavares, but then lost three on the bounce. Tyler Lacy's, no shame in that. Dan Henderson was knocked out, no shame in that. Ed Herman, that should have been a fight that he should be winning. He obviously moved back up to light heavyweight for that. Picked up wins against Josh Saman, may he rest in peace. Rafael Natal after that, big win that was against Rafael Natal. Natal was a quality fighter when he was fighting. But then lost against Jacare And then he's flip-flopped again, and it's Johnny Hendricks winning that one and then getting submitted by Shoeface, Antonio Carlos Jr. So it's tough. It is tough. He's just been rebounding wins and losses for a long, long time. And he really needs a result in this one, Tim Boach. He really, really does need the result. And it's a horrendous matchup for him. Akhmadov is... He's just a powerhouse. He really is. He's the kind of guy that Tim Boach has been struggling against for the last few years now. He's quite small for the weight class, but that shouldn't matter. I mean, his skills sort of make up for the size differential he's given up against Boach. Obviously, Boach is a big, big boy for middleweight. And you look at Akhmadov's record, I mean, there's the losses on there that are completely understandable. You know, Sergio Moraes, quality opponent. Gunnar Nelson, quality opponent. But he seems to be on a decent run now. You know, he had the draw against Marvin Vettori in his last time out. Vettori's a good European fighter. There's no shame in that. I thought he won that fight. But Kyle Note was a great win. Kyle Note, obviously a veteran of the sport. Been in there with some of the best. He's been in there with so many fighters. Unbelievable, Kyle Noak. I think he's retired now. But that was a quality win for him over in Australia. Beat Abdul Razak Al-Hassan by split decision. That was a fight I definitely thought he won. And that's a good win. If you look at Al-Hassan's performances in the UFC, some of them have been outstanding. He's a powerhouse. He's a little powerhouse. He's good everywhere. More than capable on the ground. Nasty on the feet. And can knock you out of anything. You know, he's got good knees, good elbows, got heavy, heavy hands. I think Akhmadov's going to get this done, to be honest. I think Boach is on the downside of his career, as proven by the kind of salty record he's had in the last few years, sort of rebounding wins and losses. I think Akhmadov's going to clock him with something big in the first round, and I think you'll see him just following down to the ground and pound him out. I'll say it's a round one TKO. Beneil Dariush, we see Beneil Dariush returning quite quickly after his last fight, actually. So he fought in November against Thiago Moises, picked up a unanimous decision there. Dariush is quality. I think he's one of the best in the world at lightweight. He's just had a bit of a shit run with some results. I mean, Chiesa beat him, but there's no shame in that. Chiesa's quality. Barboza caught him in a fight that was competitive up to that point. You know, highlight reel KO lad out of flying knee. There's not really much you can do. Alexander Hernandez caught him early, starched him in 40 seconds last year at UFC 222. But there's some great wins on his record. I mean, he's beat James Vick. We know how good James Vick is. Michael Johnson was a good win for him. Tony Martin, Darren Cruikshank, Jim Miller, Carlos Diego Ferreira, that was a good win. There's some quality wins on Dariush's record. He's got so many skills in so many different areas. He's a great striker, a really nasty striker. Obviously, an amazing ground game, fantastic jiu-jitsu game. I just think he's got too much for Drew Dober. I know Drew's been looking a little better recently. He absolutely deserves this shot against Dariush, against a good, solid ranked opponent. Based on what he's done recently, knocked out Josh Burtman a couple of years ago, followed out with two unanimous decision wins against Frank Camacho and John Tuck. But I just think you can tell by looking at Drew's record, once he comes up against fighters who are sort of languishing around the top 20, top 15, he does struggle. Olivier Aubin Mercier, I think, is a great fighter, really, really talented. That was his last loss. He was submitted quite quickly there, second round submission. Efren Escudero was a great fighter. I'm not sure why Efren Escudero is what he's doing these days, actually. He might even be retired himself. But that was a nasty submission. He got submitted with a standing guillotine choke in that one. Nick Hine, before that was a unanimous decision loss. Sean Spencer, back in the day when Sean Spencer was having quite a good run at the weight class, back in the day at welterweight when he was a little bit heavier, Drew. He just seems to, when he comes up against these sort of like these fighters touching the top 20, he does seem to struggle a little bit. Nothing sort of derogatory against John Tuck or Frank Camacho or Josh Burtman or anything like that, but I just feel like they were winnable fights, more than winnable fights for Drew. And I think Beneil's just got too much for Drew Dober. I just think everything that Drew does well, Beneil does a lot better, and he has a lot more tools in his arsenal. So I'm going to say that Beneil gets the fight to the ground in the second round and picks up a submission there. Ben Rothwell returns to the heavyweight division. Ben Rothwell obviously took a little bit of time out for taking some naughty supplements. So he had a bit of time out. Obviously, the last time we saw him was 2 years ago. He lost to the headliner and one of the headliners in this on this card, Junior Dos Santos. That was a very convincing unanimous decision victory for JDS. Before that, though, he was reeling off the wins left, right, and centre. Knocked out Brandon Vera and Alistair Overeem. The Alistair Overeem one was particularly nasty. And then submitted Matt Mitrione and Josh Barnett. The Josh Barnett submission was extremely impressive if you take into account Josh Barnett's catch wrestling, submission wrestling credentials. It was an outstanding victory. That really, really was impressive. He was on a good run, Ben. Obviously, that momentum was halted against JDS, and then he popped up for something or another. And he's got quite a tough ask for this in Blagoy Ivanov. So they share a common opponent, Junior Dos Santos. Junior Dos Santos dominated Ivanov as well. That was another unanimous decision victory. But before that, he was picking up quite a few wins on the bounce as well. Notable names on his record, Sean Jordan, that was a good win over in World Series of, when it was World Series of Fighting. Apart from that, you wouldn't really recognise too many names in the record. Maybe LeVar Johnson picked up an Americana quite a few years ago against LeVar Johnson. LeVar Johnson, obviously former UFC man, lost to Alexander Volkov for the Bellator MMA heavyweight finale that they had a few years ago, their heavyweight tournament. Lost it to Volkov by rear naked choke. That was, I think it was in the first round, if I'm not too mistaken, but I can't quite remember. But yeah, Volkov in his Bellator day submitted him. I think this is Ben Rothwell's fight to lose. He's a bit of a jack of all trades. Ivanov, he's quite good everywhere, but Rothwell's obviously got nasty striking. We've seen him land some huge knockouts before, and he's superb on the ground. He's got some really, really dangerous submissions in his arsenal. He's very slick, he's very strong, like gorilla strong. Whether that's helped to the supplements or anything or not, I don't know, but we don't need to talk about that, do we? He's paid his time, he's paid his dues. He's just better everywhere. I think it's Ben Rothwell's fight to lose. I think it'd be a nice little showcase for him to get back into maybe the top 10 at heavyweight, and god, they need him at the moment, don't they? I know there's a couple of options at the top for DC, but Ben Rothwell coming back to the division is not a bad thing at all. We do need some fresh impetus up there, I think. And if Rothwell can pick up the win here, there's some really entertaining matchups for him in the top 5 to top 10 at heavyweight. So, yeah, I'm going to say Rothwell finishes this in the third round by submission. That's my pick for that one. Tim Means and Nico Price. So Tim Means, obviously you know what you're getting with a Dirty Bird. He's, whether he's at lightweight or welterweight, he just is entertainment, violence personified all round, isn't he? He's either going out on his shield or he's getting you out of there. He's been a bit of a victim of rough decisions recently. He had a split decision losses to Bilal Muhammad and Sergio Moraes. Rebounded with a nasty TKO against Ricky Rainey, first round TKO in November. Before that, obviously flip-flop fights with Alex Oliveira. Fights with Alex Oliveira. He had the unfortunate sort of knee situation. The first fight where Alex Oliveira landed those knees, then he lost by rear naked choke. Bounced back against Alex Garcia. That was a good win for him, unanimous decision win. Tim, you know what you're getting with Tim Means. He's not a world beater by any stretch of the imagination, no disrespect to him, but he's a solid fighter. He's a solid welterweight / lightweight fighter. He'll cause problems for anyone on his day, but I don't think he's going to cause Nico Price too much bother here. So Nico Price obviously had a rough going on his last start against Abdul Razak Al-Hassan. Obviously, I was talking about Al-Hassan before. He's landed some nasty knockouts before, and Nico Price was one of them. Before that, though, really, really good win. It lost against Vicente Luque. No shame in that. You saw how good Luque looked in his last go-around, that fight of the year contender against Brian Barberena. But beat Alan Jaban by knockout, that TKO. That was a great win. Obviously, we know how talented Alan Jaban is. Randy Brown was a great win, won that one by knockout. George Sullivan picked up a submission there. I'm going to say that Nico Price wades forward, shows no respect for Tim Means. I'm going to say it's a super entertaining fight while it lasts, but I think you'll see a first round knockout. Nico Price just has a lot of power, and I don't think Tim Means is going to be able to withstand that for too long. Tim Means is tough, but I just think Nico Price, is the power that he possesses, is going to tell a difference. He's going to pick up a big first round knockout here. Co-main, I thought it should have been Tim Means and Nico Price to co-main, but it's not. The UFC have decided to go with Eliseo Zaleski dos Santos, so Small dos Santos, we're going to call him, and Curtis Millender. So Small dos Santos, he's on a very good run actually at the moment. So he had a bit of a, I think it was his UFC debut. I'm not entirely sure it was the first or second fight of the promotion, but had a rough one with Nicholas Dolby, close fight, but I definitely think Nicholas Dolby, former Cage Warrior standout. I think Nicholas is back in Cage Warriors now, actually. But he was at the time former Cage Warrior standout, former welterweight champion. Had a rough go in a fight. I think Dolby definitely won, but that ended up being a split decision. And ever since then, he's been just reeling off win after win after win. He's beat Amari Akhmadov, who's obviously on the card too. Keita Nakamura, unanimous decision. Lyman Good, you know what you're getting with Lyman Good. He's quality. Apart from a couple of times he's faced top names, Ben Askren, Damian Maia. Like, Lyman Good's one of those sort of jack of all trades again. And he picked up a good split decision there. Sean Strickland was an amazing knockout. So he hit him with a big spinning wheel kick, followed up with punches. He won that one. Luigi Vandramini on his last go out, flying knee. He's just looked outstanding recently. Small dos Santos, he's looked really, really good, and he's just brimming with confidence, isn't he? But Curtis Millender, do not sleep on this man. He is ridiculously talented, and I don't think enough people are talking about him. So Curtis Millender at the moment, I think he's on a 9-fight win streak. And the last few fights, to tell you all you need to know, he's obviously stepped up a little bit in competition. Thiago Alves knocked him out. I know Thiago Alves isn't the same fighter as he was 10 years ago, but Thiago Alves with a nasty knee knocked him out early last year. Max Griffin then, that was a really impressive unanimous decision. Sayar Bahadurzada picked up a unanimous decision against Sayar, and Sayar's one of them. He's super, super talented. I know he's not in the top 15 at the moment, but he could beat anyone on his day. He seems to have just stepped up nicely in competition, Curtis, and he's full of confidence as well. I think you're going to see a barn burner here. I think it's going to be a stand-up fight. I don't think either of them are going to be interested in taking it down. And if I could choose one, I think it's going to be a bit of a coin toss, but Curtis Millender's going to be the one that gets it done. I just think he's a little bit more talented. He's got a few more skills, a few more tools in his arsenal. I know I like to say that. A few more tools in his arsenal. I think he'll be the higher one in confidence, and I just because of the amount of wins he's picked up and the guys that he's beaten, and I think he's gonna get a late stoppage in this one against Smaller dos Santos. I think he picks up a third round TKO, but this one's a coin toss. I think it could go either way. I just think Curtis Millender's just that little bit better, and that's all it comes down to basically. So that brings us to the main event of the evening. And Big Dos Santos, Junior Dos Santos, former UFC heavyweight champion. And you know what you're getting with JDS. He's great boxing, heavy, heavy hands, and just wants to knock you out. He's had a few rough losses over the years, but he seems to have bounced back nicely again. Last fight against Tai Tuivasa, picked up a big knockout over in Australia. Obviously beat Ivanov, who's on this card too, by unanimous decision before that. Ivanov, dangerous opponent, but won a very impressive unanimous decision. Beat Ben Rothwell, who's also on the card. That was a really impressive unanimous decision. Victory against Ben, who was riding high at the time. Stipe Miocic beat him in a classic a few years ago in a fight that could have gone either way. Obviously, Stipe avenged that a few years later. Rough loss to Alistair Overeem thrown in there. Obviously, the losses to Cain Velasquez. People question whether he'd looked the same since, but JDS is still good enough to beat anyone on his day. Whether if he wins this one, whether it's enough to get him a title shot, I don't know, but it definitely puts him up there one fight away, doesn't it? But Derek Lewis is just one. He's just one of them. You know, he's, again, you know exactly what you're getting with Derek Lewis. He's not interested in wrestling with you. He's not interested in going to the ground. He's not really interested in MMA as a sport overall. He just wants to knock your head clean off its fucking shoulders. And if your name's not Francis Ngannou, is there anyone else in the UFC that hits as hard as Derek Lewis does? And JDS is there to be hit. So, it's a tough one because on paper, JDS should win a decision here. I don't think he can knock Lewis out. I think Lewis is tough enough to withstand anything that JDS throws at him. But all it takes is one shot. And the perfect fight to prove that for me was the Volkov fight. Volkov was dominating it. It wasn't a particularly epic fight by any means, but Volkov was dominating that fight from start to finish. 10 seconds left, and Derek Lewis lands, you know, a haymaker thrown from the dawn of time, finishes it with maybe 10 seconds left on the clock. He just has the ability to do that at any point. We've not seen him since DC. His failed title bid at UFC 230. But obviously before that, knocked out Volkov, had the worst fight of all time against Ngannou, where he did just a little bit more and so won a decision. Marcin Tybura won that one by TKO. He's the power in his hands is just ridiculous. You know, his knockouts over Gonzaga, Grabowski was a nasty one. Abdurakhimov was a nasty one. Travis Brown, he destroyed after having a bit of trouble early on in that one. Just a top fighter in terms of the power he possesses and the fact that can make all the difference at any one time. Like I say, you know what you're getting with Derek Lewis. You know exactly how to prepare for him. You just got to avoid him hitting you. That's pretty much it. I'm gonna go with my head over my heart on this one. I'm gonna say that JDS is obviously the more skilled fighter. He can do a lot more. He can mix it up a lot more. He's got the ability to take it down and use some wrestling and some of his grappling shots and take it down if he needs to. You know, he does. I'm pretty sure JDS has a black belt. I'm fairly sure JDS has a black belt. I'm not sure if I've just made that up on the spot, but you know, he's not by any means a novice on the ground, JDS. He can grapple and he can submit opponents, make no mistake about it. And he's got that option available to him there if he needs it. And I think the wise thing for JDS to do is just threaten the takedown and use it to land his strikes. And I think he picks up another unanimous decision victory here. I wouldn't be surprised if Derek Lewis knocks him out, but JDS, if he can stay smart, stay focused, mix it up, threaten takedowns, get Derek, you know, hesitant to throw, and just be smart about it, not get drawn into a brawl or anything like that. I think he picks up a unanimous decision victory here, and I think that is the way it's going to go, more likely than not. And that is it for Sunday's podcast with me, Chris Collins. Really hope you enjoyed this. Obviously, I'm still absolutely knackered. Like I say, running high on adrenaline and coffee from last night, but it was a great card last night. Some really, really good fights. Obviously good to see top names back in there as well. What you do with Tyron Woodley, I don't know. It's going to be hard for him to ever get a title shot again, I think, considering his relationship with Dana White's not the best. But it's good to see John Jones back. Obviously we like seeing John Jones compete, no matter what his problems are, what my thoughts are on him and his drug troubles in the past. You know, he's still one of the best to ever do it. It's thoroughly entertaining to watch. It was another sort of dominant decision from him, dominant performance from him last night. You know where to find us on social media. We are on Twitter, we're on Instagram, we are on Facebook at The Collcast, COLLCAST. We are obviously on all platforms as well, podcast-wise, Spotify, Anchor, Apple, Google, I don't know what all the others are, but we're on all of them. Anyway, we're available everywhere. So get on there, subscribe, please, because then I don't have to moan at you to listen to episodes. Your phone will just go boop like that, send you a little push notification, tell you that these episodes are up and uploaded and ready to listen to. Can't think of when I will do the next one. I think maybe I will wait until the dust settles from the two events this weekend. I might do another Sunday/Monday one next week, get out nice and early, so you can all listen to it on the car or in your cars on your way to work or wherever you like to listen to me drone on about MMA. And apart from that, just like and, you know, share everything that I'm posting on social media. Really appreciate the support. Slide into my DMs like you always do. Tell me where I can get better. Tell me what you like and what you dislike. I'm super appreciative of all of that. And yeah, that is it. I'm not going to drone on for too much longer. Go off and enjoy your weekends while you've still got some. I've got 5 hours roughly left of my Sunday and I'm going to spend all of it sleeping, I think. So that's me. That's what I'm going to spend my time doing. I'm looking forward to another entertaining week in the fight world. God knows what's going to happen, but it's fun as always, isn't it? Just like last night was. Bit of weird, bit of good, bit of bad, but that's why we love the sport. Enjoy your weekends. I'm Chris Collins, and I will speak to you soon.